welcome back to the Unending TPR podcast. This is Nicole again. I am really excited to have this returning guest. She is an author that has come on the podcast two other times, and I'm so looking forward to this book that she's going to talk about today. Thank you for joining. I am very happy to welcome back Rachel Z. Russell. Thank you for joining me again, Rachel.
Thank you for having me.
So, how has writing been since we last talked?
Let's see. We have had, I can't even think of year numbers at this point. I had a longer period of time to write this last novel, but while I was writing it, we kind of set it, you know, shelved this Fox series while we did a Christmas novella collection. Yeah. So I actually had, in total, I worked on this book for 2 years, but it was not a full 2 years dedicated to this novel. It had that interruption in the middle of it. So writing's been both, I would say, slower and faster because there's been this, you know, these moments of rush and these, kind of lags, and we had some family hardships occur in the middle of it. My father-in-law passed away, and then my mother battled cancer, and so my writing journey kind of had to fit into those little margins around life. And I turned in this manuscript for It's Your Love less than 2 weeks before my mom passed away. Oh. And then that was just this last December. And then when I got it back for edits, I had a lot of rewriting to do. I mean, I deleted and rewrote probably more than 30, 40,000 words. And then I had to rewrite more again. So in total, I mean, in many ways, it feels like it's a whole new book, but it's, you know, God really used those layers of life, as I wrote the story. And, I think I'm finally reaching, a place where I feel like, you know, this story, I really feel like it connects with me. Well, I'm sure we'll get into a little more about it specifically, but yeah. it's been a story that's been part of my own life journey. That's for sure.
So you feel like it's definitely a different kind of level of investment than your first few books, you feel?
In many ways, yes. I had more freedom, because we still had to fit it into alignment with this overarching story. You know, it's still part of a collection of books written with Andre Christensen and Michelle Sass Alexson, but you know, each book still stands alone. I do feel like, because I feel like God really used this story in particular to work on me. Mm. Yeah.
That is so, I love hearing stories. Like, I am so sorry for all the loss and the hardship that you have gone through, but I love hearing how the Lord can use this and even the process of writing it to help us. So I'm glad for that.
Amen.
So like, tell me about, like, catch me up a little bit on what's going on in Deep Haven with the Fox Family series, and tell me about your characters, Grayson Fox and the heroine Beth Strauss.
Well, readers met Beth in Then Came You, mm-hmm. and she was the very petite kayak instructor who had tried out for the play and surprised everyone when she kind of like showed up. You know, she'd always been this little quiet person in the background, and just a gentle soul. Yeah. And Vivian had tried to play matchmaker between Beth and Boone, and in the meantime realizes actually Vivian liked Boone herself.
Yeah.
And so when Beth walks on the page, she's really not living her authentic self. She's still a little, she's been adrift. She's a helper, and she has her own, you know, she's got her family situation. She's 28 and she still lives with her dad. And there's some backstory there, but she has this opportunity to kind of step into a position that she feels like is really like a step in the direction of being who she's meant to be. So we have her coming on the page, and then we have Grayson Fox, and he's the middle child of the Fox siblings. The first book, How Sweet It Is, highlights Robin Fox, who's the youngest sister of the three siblings. Grayson's the middle child, and after high school, he just kind of took off. You know, it was get out of Dodge, get out of Deep Haven. Yep. And he headed west, and he landed in Oregon and has been working at a ranch. And we find out early on that he's actually lost his job at the ranch. And Noah Standing Bear, who readers will recognize from, I think it's Tying the Knot.
Yes.
Tying the Knot.
Yeah.
He has been running the Wilderness Challenge Camp and had started a youth horse camp a couple years after he started Wilderness Challenge Camp. It's adjacent to Wilderness Challenge. And when Grayson was young, this is where he first met horses. And it's where horses first became part of his life. And Noah's regular wrangler's been injured. And Noah requests Grayson to come serve as their wrangler for the summer. And Grayson's thinking, this is a pretty good deal because he's now jobless, but he has this ranch in Oregon he'd really like to buy because he'd like to start his own camp. And so when he walks on the page, he's not super wild about coming back to Deep Haven. There's just a lot of, you know, the three Fox kids have kind of struggled to figure out, you know, where they belong a little bit, I think. And so they've all been scattered. So he comes back to town, and his grandparents have a vacant lot that had been the parents' lot. So he's thinking he can sell that. He can make money over summer at the camp. And then he's heading back to Oregon to do this deal and start his own camp. And we learn that Beth was his best Grayson's high school best friend's little sister. How is that for an introduction? So we have the brother's best friend trope going yeah. on, and Beth and Grayson had a little moment in high school that did not end well. So there's some they're not excited to bump into each other as they come on scene.
It sounds like a great beginning.
I really do adore these two characters.
I remember our last conversation. I'm like, because I loved Beth, that little bit of Beth that we had. I feel like she was small, but also outdoorsy, also bookish. Like she was that kind of, she kind of beat her own stereotype in some ways. And I'm just yes. like, she is such a cool character. So, so that's the introduction. So now you, like Grayson Fox being a horse trainer, and you are a horse lover. How was that including that part of it into the book?
You know, it was in some ways harder than I thought. First, I loved it. I mean, I really loved it. It was so exciting. And even Susan May Warren, when she first read my draft, she's like, she was really excited. And I was so excited to hear from her because she's, you know, she could tell in my writing, you know, they always say, write what you love. And she mm-hmm. said she could really feel through the writing that this was something that, I loved and was excited to share and write about. The challenging part was though, was not realizing lingo that I consider normal everyday language that non-horse people don't know.
Yeah.
And so, and then not wanting to spend pages explaining what these terms are and what it means, and finding that balance between writing it so horse people get it and aren't like, you know, rolling their eyes like, as well as writing it so non-horse people would get it and not be lost, you know, trying to make sure something's in context. Yeah. And I mean, I think I had to change one sentence. It was hilarious. The sentence, the phrase was that Beth had kissed the horse into a canter or something like that, which is just a kissing sound a rider would make with their lips to urge the horse into a canter. And, you know, one of the editors read that and she left me this comment, like, I have no idea what this means. Like, she's kissing the horse.
You accidentally mean kick.
So I had to, you know, change little things like that. You know, terminology for some of the tack, or just kind of streamlining. There's some pack horses that, you know, I didn't want to get deep dive into the process of what that is. So it was a fun challenge, but it was unexpected for sure.
I remember using like the term, and I thought it was like, I thought everybody knew, but I remember using the term hobbled once.
Yes.
And they looked at me like, oh great, did I just say something like weird innuendo thing that I don't even know what it means? And it's like hobbled, you know, like a horse.
Yes. We just take those things for granted, you know, and we don't even realize the language we speak is so different from non-horse people.
Yes, that is true. Okay. So you like, so words of advice, if you're writing something very horse related, have a non-horse person as your editor.
Yeah. Yeah. And then work together to balance, you know, balance that out. So it's not, you know, bland, but also they can understand the context of it.
You didn't read Saddle Club growing up. So what did you enjoy the most about Beth and Grayson?
They are fun together. They have a very playful dynamic. They have this, you know, this history from childhood. So they know how to kind of push each other's buttons, and they bring that to the page. They have this kind of embarrassing situation that happened in their past. And I also enjoy they bring out, you know, first they kind of bring out the worst in each other, but truly they bring out the best in each other. And there is a sweetness and an innocence about their relationship, like kind of a raw pureness about it. And I just they made me laugh as I wrote them, and I hope they make readers laugh too. They are just a lot of fun. They're very, to me, they're characters that I couldn't help but root for.
Oh, that's great. And you feel like those are the qualities that, what do you feel like makes them complement each other so well? Do you feel like it's that core base of their thing? Do they have like different strengths that bounce off of each other?
Yeah. Beth is dealing with a little bit of fear, and she draws a lot of strength from Grayson's encouragement. He never forces her to do anything. He never, you know, shames her, but the fact that he believes in her is enough for her to start believing in herself and to kind of take these little risks. And you realize over time, her capacity to take reasonable risks grows just through this organic experience of life with being around him. And for Grayson, you know, he's many ways isolated himself from relationships, and you know, readers find out why that is in the story, but Beth draws him in, you know, so, or draws him out, depending on how you want to look at it. He can't help but become involved because she's part of so many things in Deep Haven, And she's just this, yeah, like you said, this both bookworm, but there's a sense of adventure within her. And so she draws him into connection, and he realizes that, again, he's also had fears and struggles with fears, but he realizes that there's things that are worth risking as he gets to know her better.
That is really cool. How is that like to work where they both have something? How did you make it like where they both have a similar flaw or struggle to overcome? How did you feel like you made it like unique to that character?
You know, it's interesting. I don't know. This might just be a thing I do, because Boone and Vivian also similarly struggled with two sides of the same identity coin. And Beth and Grayson struggle with, you know, sides of the fear thing. I think because the root of their fears are different and unique, how it plays out for them is different. Mm-hmm. And who they are as people is different. So, I mean, a lot of us in real life, we have the same types of fears, because as humans we have the same types of, you know, we have basic needs, but how our life experiences have shaped us, those things show up in how we how those different things show up in our lives. So those of us, you know, in best case, you know, she had lost somebody close to her who had chosen to leave. In Grayson's case, he lost people through a tragedy. So you have one person dealing with loss through a conscious choice and an abandonment, and another person who by life circumstances has lost loved ones. So I think for them and just their personalities, it shows up different for them, but yet it's really integrated and relatable, but I don't think either one of them sees the similarities. At first, I think it takes them both a while to realize. And again, how often do we do that, where it's so easy for us to see someone else in armchair, you know, psychoanalyze them. And all the while, we have some of those same stories we tell ourselves, or same fears that we're actually holding and carrying with us.
Yeah, I feel like as a reader, you're so much come across like this these characters, like, oh, that character's making such poor decisions and all this stuff. And then you get to that point where that aha moment, like, oh my goodness, this speaks to me.
Yes, for sure.
Oh. So are there any scenes that you can share, scenes that come to mind that you think readers will find particularly entertaining?
There is a scene early in the book. I'll share this one because there's a scene, it's pretty early in the book. Okay. And it's one of the first scenes I knew was in this book. In fact, when my first draft, my very, very first draft, like before the whole book was completed, this was like when I first wrote it was actually going to be the opening scene, and then it had to be shifted, so a whole different chapter came first in the final version. But let's see, how is the I'm trying to think of the best way to convey it. Beth ends up getting herself in a situation where she is literally dressed as a book. And she can't see because, you know, Beth's petite, and, you know, her internal dialogue, I mean, I think she's a funny girl. And so she's stumbling around, unable to see things, on a sidewalk advertising the children's summer reading program. And she can't see because the eye holes don't fit her. And it's a hot day, so she's, you know, sweating buckets, wearing, you know, these tights and stuff under this book costume that the librarian has conned her into putting on. And she hears dogs. There are dogs getting closer, barking. And I don't want to give too much away from the scene, but
No, I
it's a
am like
really
already, I'm like, and
fun.
next.
It's a really, really funny scene, and
Oh.
there's several things that come out of that scene, but just this image, you know, like I said, that was one of the first things I knew, was that my character was stumbling around on the sidewalk wearing this book costume, and she couldn't see anything. And if you've ever gone to like the baseball games when they have the mascots running around like at before the game and stuff doing their races, I just and they fall and they can't move, you know, because they have these ridiculous huge costumes on and their legs are flailing and there's these little arms sticking out. So this was my vision for Beth, and poor Beth.
Was like the vision. It's like, Beth, you are going to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so how has it been co-writing like this series? So now this is the, you know, that you guys have written a series now in the Deep Haven. All was it different plotting out a family as opposed to the previous books that were just kind of like, I mean, they were interconnected,
Right.
but it was, is it different at this family element to do?
Yeah, we it was really funny because we thought when we started out, we're like, oh, this will be easier, but we made it so much harder because Susie was really you know, she's fairly hands off with this, and she said, well, they need to be connected. So the Fox Bakery actually had also appeared in Then Came You. It's a passing mention when,
But it
but it's mentioned in there. And so we're like, well, what if we have this family? So that was a connection right there, was the family. But then I don't know, we had this wild idea. Well, what if their dark, you know, this original dark moment story of their past was all intertwined? It was the same event.
there.
So we have three people who are related who had the same, you know, traumatic life event, but they all took away from it something different. And we spent a lot of time like asking each other, wait, what? How did you write what happened? How old are our people? How old is your person? How old were they when this happened? And so it was fun. It was challenging. I think we each ended up with a story that we really suits us. We got there by a lot of hard work, a lot of hard work, blood, sweat, and tears, but
Probably really
great
helped
fun.
have those that previous experiences co-writing another series, you know, to
Yes.
you guys knew how to work with each other, I assume, you know.
Yes, yeah, we work really well together. We hop on you know, Zoom calls and we text each other, and it's like SOS, you know, or pray for me. Literally pray for me. It's been a great fun and an honor to work so closely with both of them through all these books. It's you know, it's a sisterhood bond we have now. And I don't know what future with any more Deep Haven books, but I am so very grateful that the three of us ended up coming together to write these books together and grow together and learn together. It's been a really, really great experience.
That is great to hear. I love hearing that story. I've always loved hearing how it's like authors supporting each other and helping each other out. It's just so cool to know that there's that community element to it.
Yes.
So, what would you say would be your favorite element of writing this story?
I think being able to include the horses really excited me. Getting to include that this character comes from Oregon, which is where I live, and a little bit of bringing Oregon to Deep Haven. And even that, it was funny because I didn't think anything of it, that he wears a cowboy hat and boots, and in one of my early well, my first read from Susie, she said, you need to make it known. That would stand out. She said, that's not something you would see in Deep Haven. I said, oh, okay. Because again, I'm writing from my experience, it never occurred to me that having somebody walk in with boots and jeans and a hat on would be unusual.
Yeah.
So it didn't take much to, you know, sprinkle that in, but just that perspective.
Yeah.
But getting to write about horses, which is just always been a passion of mine, and getting to use, even the injury, there's a horse that has an injury, which was based off of an injury my horse had. My horse's injury actually was more serious than what I gave my, the horse in the book. But, and my horse came through it as well. So no, there's no animal, permanent no injury. Yes. I do not permanently injure animals in my books, but, getting to share my passion through Grayson and how much he wants to share that with horses, the way, they've been such a comfort in my life, and the friendships with horses that I've had. So I truly, truly enjoyed getting to put so much of that into this book, and, you know, even life at the barn and having them, you know, tacking up horses and the dust and the smell of horse and all those things, getting to put that on the page was
wonderful,
super fun. Yeah.
I can just think clearer when I can smell horse around there. And it's like the smell, it's like your brain can process that. Yeah. So
yeah.
Totally, just being around them. Oh, I'm looking forward to that and that. So was there a part of this story that you feel really challenged you as a writer?
I found plotting the whole, like, I knew certain pieces of the story, but for a long time I had kind of this gap in the story. And part of it was, as I mentioned before, I had a lot of things going on in life. And I was really struggling to tap into creative energy. You know, when you're in that space of life, death, fight or flight, freeze, you're not being creative. It's just, our brains aren't designed to do that. So it was really interesting. Sunrise was gracious and we discussed my timeline. It actually, they pushed it out for me so I could have time to focus on my mom. Mm. And coming out of that, I think I mentioned I turned in the draft in December and then I got it back. And between March and the end of June, I'd rewritten it twice.
Wow.
But the story it became was so much better for that, you know, the totality of it all. And really finding that that place of surrender, that was like the word God kept putting on my heart through this, was really giving my writing up as an offering and letting go of expectations and outcomes and fear. And, you know, as my characters were battling fear, I said that it was something that was really working in me. You know, we want control in our lives.
Yeah.
And we love to hold on to the illusion of control, which is something my characters do. I think a lot of us humans do. Yeah. And there was just a real turning point for me where I I was able to really dig into the story better. And, you know, I working full time, I can't tell you how those words showed up on the page. I really can't. They did. I'm grateful. Cause there was some, you know, moments where I thought this is impossible. There's no way I can do this. And, you know, realizing that if I just let it go and take breaths and surrender the entire thing, it would come together, and it did. So really that surrendering, which I have to continually relearn because it is not natural. I will be re-experiencing that again and again as I work through every book and every project, re-surrendering.
That's a really good point about how so many times I wish it's like, oh, I wish, okay, I learned that lesson, I'm good now. And it's like, no, unfortunately, I'm gonna have to do it again.
Yeah. So
that's what you really learned by writing this book, was that surrender in your own life?
I do. Yeah. You know, there's trusting God and knowing his plans may not align with our plans. The verse, I have a verse at the beginning of the book, and Courtney, who was also from Then Came You, she appears in this book. Courtney and Vivian give Beth a bookmark that has the verse on it, which of course is escaping me. I want to say it's Deuteronomy 31, 6 through 8. I'll have to double check that. But just really giving things up to God, trusting that he is with us, he is for us. And again, so much of what my characters were learning, you know, here Noah and Anne are speaking truth to Grayson. And if you pick up tying the knot, that's one of the truths learned, is that God turns things into, you know, the hardships in our life, he turns into something for his glory and our good according to his will. And we know in our hearts that he is a good and almighty God. We don't like to endure the hardships of this life, but yet we know we have eternal life, and he is not looking at this piece of our life the way we do. Mm-hmm. And if we look at, you know, when I look back over my life, even the hard things that happen that no one, I would never say were good things, but now in hindsight, I can see how God still used those things. And I mean, my father passed away when I was in, I just graduated college. I would never say that was a good thing. I met my husband because of it. So just, we never know. And that's what my characters struggle with, is finding that balance and relearning those truths again and again, and being in the word that we can be bolstered by those truths.
Oh, that is so beautiful. And it's like, that's such a great hope that, you know, even the hard things are not wasted. It's not out of his control.
So yes.
That is really very encouraging. I love that you were willing to share that with us. So how did you come about the title of your book in particular?
You know, it's a song that's always been kind of special to me. It's a song, you know, from early dating with my husband, and you know, it's a beautiful duet that Faith Hill and Tim McGraw sang together as husband and wife, and it just struck me as the perfect song for Grayson and Beth as they lean into each other. And as I mentioned earlier, the fact that they each encourage each other in healthy ways to kind of broaden and step into who they're really meant to be. And the last scene of the book, which again, no spoilers here, but the last scene of the book is really special to me. And again, a little bit taken out a page from my life. It takes place in one of my favorite places. And the experience they have as they're in this place and all the emotions that go with it, it just really for me represents that the overwhelming power of love and what it's like to really step into what God has meant for us, and that so often that can be more than what we even meant, you know, thought we were going to do. He has an even better plan for us, an even bigger idea for us.
Oh, I love it. I mean, I just feel like that satisfaction of the happily ever after already. Can't wait to read it. Oh, I am so looking forward to this. It just sounds fantastic. And it sounds like you ladies have done a great job with the second season. And what do you feel like, not to rush you or anything, but what do you feel is next for you writing wise? Are you taking a break? Are you working on something else?
I actually have another contract with Sunrise Publishing. I'm not sure how much we can say about it at this time, but it is not, what I can say, it's not in Deep Haven. And ooh, it is not directly with my Deep Haven counterparts. So, but it is with other authors, and it's in a new world that, so it's, I know there's a lot of like exciting things coming, but it's that series will not be releasing till what year is it? Probably, I think it's slated for 2025. So more to come on that one. I'm hoping in the meantime, actually, to there's a couple other stories that I've worked on in between things, and I would love to be able to publish something in 2024 that is entirely my own and in my own world, whether that's in a collection. I've been invited to participate in a couple novel collections with other authors, or if I indie publish, I haven't decided what direction. I better just write it first. But my first focus is this.
You're is not, this story. Not booking the movie deal yet.
Right.
It's like, I know exactly who I'd cast. Okay.
Yeah. So first things first, though, I owe this book under contract, and I'm actually going to be finishing up the some of the nitty gritty details in the plot this weekend. And I'm hoping to actually fast draft it and have that done by, ambition would say by the end of the year. Realistic, I'd be excited by the end of January. Yeah. And I'm hoping as I go along, I get faster at this whole writing thing.
Do you feel like you have gotten to be a faster writer with the practice that you've had and like just this experience?
I do. Yeah. You know, I am still, what I found is when I let go of my left brain, this very logical, super structured thinking, and allow myself to the freedom to make mistakes and be creative and just kind of throw messy things on a piece of paper, I'm starting to come up with better. I come up with more ideas. Yeah. And whereas before I would get so buckled down trying to have the right answer, and that I would not allow myself that freedom. And that's what I really found with this book. I feel like I really was finally able to find that, you know, those creative answers and really feel the story more. And I have a lot of, you know, there's always room to grow. And I aspire to be one of those authors that can churn out several books a year while working full time. That is amazing, but I know it's possible. And, you know, but also not measuring myself by that. It's really,
say, I'm like, yeah, I bet that would be hard to put pressure on your creativity by like, I have to get it, you know, by the deadlines and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
I do think it's easy, again, to fall into the trap, the comparison trap, and think, well, these other authors, they can work full time and write 3 novels in a year. I should be able to do that. Yeah. And just leaning into, well, you know, what does God have for me to write? And what pace is that? And because we all have different things going on in our lives. And there might be seasons where I write more prolifically and seasons that are slower. And that's okay. I think I've learned those first 2 novels with Deep Haven that were written in 1 year were amazing and also very hard. They were a very big challenge for me physically, mentally, emotionally, because of how they fit into my life or didn't fit into my life. So I'm trying really hard to not commit to more than 1 book a year. Mm. As far as external deadlines, again, if I have time of my own to do something, write something and indie publish it, then I would be open to that. But I don't want to commit to multiple contracts at this time, because there's a lot of sacrifice that has to be made. And I, especially after facing so much loss in my life, I really want to be able to have the breadth of life where I can have my writing time that's a block of time, reasonable deadlines, and also be with my family, not feel like I have to take time away from them to write, as well as riding my horse, taking care of my health, you know, feeling like I can go for a walk, all those things that when you're under a lot of tight deadlines and you feel you owe this manuscript and you gotta be creative right now, you lose some of that. So I'm trying to really keep a place of peace and inner calm as I approach my writing.
Oh, that is great. I really hope that for you, because I've so enjoyed your story so far. So looking forward to this next one and whatever you have next. So where can listeners, same places, can you list them off in case anybody's new here?
Sure. So it's Your Love is, you mean where they can buy the book or where I'm found? I guess I should clarify.
No. Yeah.
Okay. The book can be actually, there's an early release with Sunrise Publishing's own web store on October 10th. So as early as October 10th, that ebook will be out there for people buying it directly from Sunrise. And then the release date through Amazon is November 7th.
Okay.
And it's also available for pre-order from Barnes and Noble and other retailers. As far as me, I'm most active on Instagram, and you know, this is, we're waiting here because I actually have to look at what my exact Instagram handle is, because I never think about it. I am at Rachel, RACHELD Russell Writes on Instagram. And then Facebook is Rachel D. Russell Fiction. Okay. And of course, on my website, readers can sign up for my subscriber list, which is racheldrussell.com. And I'm looking forward to, that's another thing I've been really finally having time to do, is work on some fun stuff for my subscribers. who have been grossly neglected over the years. So I've been I'm
busy.
Yes, it's true. It's true. So I'm kind of excited. I've been working on some fun things. I've been making, I haven't finished it yet, but I've actually been working on a map of the camp that would be exclusive for my subscribers, and just some other fun things like that, that the, I think readers would enjoy to have, that are special and unique and not available anywhere else.
It's very exclusive. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, well, thank you so much for talking, Rachel, and love to have you back when you can reveal whatever you can't reveal.
That sounds perfect. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I hope you enjoyed that episode. I sure love talking with her again. And now that I have read it, I'm recording this after I have read it, it is definitely a great story. Highly recommend it. Don't forget to follow Rachel, and hopefully, may your TBR be unending.